Lisa, Mona Lisa, men have named you. You're so like.
That's what you should let out on the air, man.
Sorry.
I said to Joe this morning, he sounds a little irritated.
I'm fine.
I am mad.
I'm fine, he said.
Well, this is my tough time of year. It really is. It's.
What did you say? I've got no food.
No food, no sex, no booze. I'm fine.
Throw no football in there. I mean, it's just a.
He said something else, too. Did you say no phone?
No food, no sex, no booze. And now no football.
No football. This is, I swear, this
not
is
a single luxury.
This is the dark days of winter for you.
The hardest week of my life is when the Seahawks lose their final game. It's the dry season. It's the weight-losing season. It takes a couple weeks for me to transition. I hate to say it. Once I see a little headway, like yesterday, I lost a couple pounds. It's
No sex, you said?
Well, not lately. That's, that's well, that comes with the,
comes with all the indulgence of the wet season.
Yeah. And it's everything dries up for a while as you transition back to, everyday life, I guess, getting back on schedule and things.
Each day is 24 hours and is his own thing of beauty. You know that. You don't
I know.
Have to look at it as months on, 6 months off.
You're making us all sick with your sex life.
One day at a time.
Come on.
I need to embrace that. I know. I need to go out there and look on the bright side of life. I usually do.
I know. That's why it's so odd when you're like, bah.
Well, I tell you, he's not alone. A lot of people are making these resolutions, these New Year get fit, and stop drinking, whatever it is. A lot of people find this to be the most time of the year.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Cabin fever time. You?
Yep, cabin fever. Yeah. I hate January. It's like my least favorite month of the entire year because there's no major holiday. There's no extreme weather.
Although we should say happy birthday, Martin Luther King. That's a holiday. It's today.
MLK. Due to help President Johnson do good things for this country.
Still love that quote.
All right. Well, would you like me to give you a couple of uplifting things about January? Maybe some of the audience can help,
too. I want to hear about Mona Lisa.
That'll cheer anybody up.
I've been waiting my entire life.
Yeah, but this guy is not getting any sex. Hearing about some dead chick for hundreds of years is not going to help him.
Could be an Italian painter in drag, for all we know.
In 1506, and by the way, we'll do this. If you have something uplifting, look on the bright side of life. Get that song queued up. How to get through cabin fever will be our next phone topic. Because I think Joe's not alone. I think a bunch of you are feeling it too. And I have a couple of thoughts, but not enough. We'll need the audience's help. 1-800-252-1025. Okay. In 1506, Leonardo da Vinci finished painting the Mona Lisa. Wrap yourself around how long ago that is. That is 502 years. Since then, how many generations is that? Well, that depends on how you define a generation. I've heard a generation defined as 25 years, every 25 years. Like a classic car is a car in 25 years. Every 25 years, it's a different generation. Okay. As I've been part of the baby boomer generation, then there's Generation X, Generation Y. What's the latest one?
The millennial generation.
And I guess every two generations you get an actual name instead of a letter. It's like hurricane names. I don't know how to do it.
Generation Frida. That's me, yeah.
So, anyway, art historians have always thought that the Mona Lisa might have been Da Vinci's girlfriend, or perhaps his mother, or a feminized version of himself, which sounds crazy back then, but people do it all the time today on the Internet.
Mm-hmm. It's his avatar.
The most popular theory was that the model was a woman named Lisa del Giocondo, or Giocondo. She was the wife of a rich merchant in Florence. Yesterday, the 500-year-old debate finally ended officially. The staff at the Heidelberg University in Berlin, Germany, was looking through a book that belonged to one of Da Vinci's closest friends. The book was about another artist from Greece, and in the margins on one of the pages, they found that Vespucci, now, is Vespucci, that's not Amerigo Vespucci, the guy who did the map.
Same last name, though.
Okay. This guy named Vespucci had written some comparisons between Pels and Da Vinci, two different artists. One of the comments said Da Vinci is working on three paintings right now, and one of them is a portrait of Lisa Del Giocondo. And based on, I don't know, cave drawings of Lisa Del Giocondo that they found elsewhere, but they said that was the missing clue that they needed to finally come up with who the Mona Lisa was.
Same year, so they know now for a fact that that's who it
that's
was.
That's it?
That's it.
Yep.
Case closed.
That's the most boring explanation. I was hoping it was somebody's stepsister's daughter's cousin that he had an illicit affair with.
Well, that's what some people think that he was actually, nailing Miss...
Thomas Jefferson had three kids by this gal, if that'll make you feel better about it.
Much better. Thank you.
There you go.
Eric, what is so special? I look at the Mona Lisa. Granted, I haven't seen it in person.
You're not missing much.
It doesn't really look like that much of a painting to me.
It's actually very cool. It's a lot smaller than you would think. It's probably about, a foot and a half high by maybe a foot wide. So it's actually pretty small, but it has this huge bulletproof case around it. It's priceless. And the thing about it is that it has this depth about it where you'd normally focus on just her face or her eyes, but it actually has this beautiful scenery around it. Masterwork.
All right, how can we cheer up Joe?
Oh, I'm happy.
It's cabin fever. What do you do to cure cabin fever?
Go on vacation.
The best answer? We'll give you a couple of tickets and a medium pizza at the Main Stage Comedy and Music Club. 1-800-252-1025. Your best cure for cabin fever. We'll take them during the break, and we'll list the top ones when we come back. I have one for you. One thing that'll be guaranteed to lift your spirits just a little bit.
Is it caloric?
It's colonic.
Ooh.
No, it's neither of those things.
Worlds away.
All right, well, I got a couple of things for you. Just one tip, and then there's some listeners on the phones. Cures for cabin fever. One, realize, and I know it's just a small thing, but realize that now that it's January, every day is getting a little bit brighter, a little bit longer. As of December 21st, which is the shortest daylight when most of us go to work in the dark and come home in the dark. Every day now, it's lighter a little bit longer. So on the way home, you can say to yourself, it's not as bad as yesterday. Are you better off than you were yesterday? Yes.
Isn't it bright? It's a brighter day.
It's a brighter day every day. Do you like that? Does that help a little?
That's good, yeah.
No, it's not worth much.
Well, I know it's going to get better. I know this is the bottom of the well. This is the great nothing right here. This is as bad as it gets. And I can take solace in knowing that, this is my bottom. I mean, this is always traditionally the worst week of my year. So it will get better. But at the same time, it doesn't help the moment, I guess.
20 years ago, I moved here from Southern California, San Diego to be exact, and the way that I got through winters here was skiing. Having that full spectrum light with the white snow was the way that I started looking forward to this time of year.
Mark says the same thing. Mark, it's skiing. That's your number one cure.
No, it's gotta be. Actually, about the only thing to do around here.
The problem is, after 6 months of drinking and debauchery, the guy is too lard fat to get out and go skiing.
No. I can still roll down a hill.
When have you? Have you gone?
I haven't. No, I haven't.
Do some steelheading.
You'll feel great after you ski.
I think you're right.
All right. Thank you, Mark. Do you have that deal with Precor? 6 months on, 6 months off, too? Like they fatten you up every year?
No,
you can come on and do the treadmill thing again?
No, I didn't mean to fatten up. It just kind of happened that way. But I have been hitting the treadmill every day.
You've been at the buffet a lot.
Yeah, I did eat quite a bit.
All right.
That helps, too, is exercise. It does help.
Greg in Woodinville, cure for cabin fever.
Yep. Best thing to do is get yourself a couple of jigsaw puzzles and do them with your kids.
I've got a Santa Claus brought a big old, 600-piecer that we haven't cracked into. That's probably a really good suggestion.
You haven't started it yet.
Not yet.
Dave in Snohomish.
You need to get yourself a cute little blonde, nice hot one, dressed in a cheerleader outfit, and have her give you one of the Texas lap dances.
Go get a lap dance. Tell your wife, look, if you don't take care of business, I'm going to take care of business.
I'd sink deeper into the well on that one. That would give me a whole new set of problems.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't go for that stuff. When Mike and I went to Vegas, Jocelyn was commanding him to go get some lap dances as a bachelor. And, you know, that was one of her commands, was to go to a strip club. And I said, you're going to
have to. I love Jocelyn's family. Can I say that again? She comes from really good stock.
Why, thank you.
Yeah. And did you?
That was the only thing she insisted that I do, and I did not. Because I knew Joe said, well, the only thing I was told I couldn't do was go to a strip club. So I felt creepy going by myself and spending all that money.
Maybe
so
Jocelyn wanted you to go by yourself. She didn't want to go with you.
She wasn't there. It was
Okay. It was
Joe
a guy's thing. Vegas. Oh, she told you to just go do it. Go ahead. Have your bachelor party.
But she has also said,
what you catch in Vegas doesn't necessarily stay in Vegas, though, despite what the slogan
that
is.
That stuff's carry on. Yeah.
I don't think there'd be any of that.
All right.
She has said, you know, if you feel like going to a strip club once in a while, I got no problem with that.
Wow.
I don't do.
Dave, do you frequent those kinds of establishments?
Not anymore.
You did, though.
I dated a couple of girls that worked at them.
Oh, ooh.
Boy, that's
in my younger days.
Yeah. They come with excess luggage, don't they?
Mine didn't, but I was kind of careful.
Yeah, as so did Eric, of all unlikely people. All right, sir, thank you. It's an idea.
Have somebody rub the depression off of you.
Lisa in Tacoma, hello.
Hi there, good morning.
All right, ways to cure cabin fever. Go ahead, Lisa.
How about a beautiful sunny day on a Washington River steelheading with a guide? That'll change your attitude.
You haven't gone fishing in years.
You don't even need gear. All you got to do is call a guide and meet him on the river, and he'll take you for a fabulous day.
Well, I went fishing in the summertime for halibut, and finally my back and rear end have recovered. I mean, it was one of those brutal 30 miles out, 30 miles back trips.
We're talking a nice, leisurely stroll down the river. It's chilly, but if you're dressed warmly, then, the scenery can't be beat.
All right. I think Joe's telling you he's too out of shape to even sit in a boat with a guy.
No, I'm not telling you that. You're right.
What's wrong with steelhead?
It's not. It's a wonderful idea.
Is it the right time of year?
Your attitude so fast.
You're so right, especially if it's a nice, sunny, crisp day.
Are you writing stuff down, Joe?
What?
Are you writing stuff down?
We're writing it all down, yeah. Okay. We're going to post it on the web. Your cures for cabin fever. Tom and Langley, go ahead.
Yeah, if he doesn't appreciate his cabin during January, let him go take a polar bear dive into Lake Washington. And when he gets out, he'll love his cabin.
I thought so much about doing that on New Year's Day. I kept hearing about these polar bear clubs, and I thought, this might be the year for that. And then I decided to go eat black-eyed peas with my mom instead, like I do every New Year's.
I don't blame you.
But I thought, you know what, that polar bear thing looks like a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Try it.
Did you do it this year?
Oh, heavens, no.
I don't get strippers. I don't jump into cold water.
No, I don't do any of those things.
You oughta.
All right, thank you. Lisa asked me to do that. I said, forget it. I said she could put on one of those 50s bathing suits, and I'll take picture, black and white pictures of her doing it. Lauren in Seattle, hello.
Hi, West Seattle.
Yes, go ahead.
Volunteer at a food bank. You know, it really puts things in perspective. And to help someone and to see people with 12-member families trying to stand there and carry as much groceries as...
Better yet, give half his food to a food bank, and he'd be dieting and helping people at the same time.
And that's one thing that does kind of make me a little depressed, is that I've got no right to be depressed, and that makes me even sadder, because nobody's got it better than me.
Paul in Buffalo.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
What do you think Joe should do?
Oh, I think he should go and do a little indoor tanning. Fake.
Never. Ooh. Never. Ooh. Never.
How about a spray on? It feels so good.
No.
Joe, go
sit under a lamp naked for a while. That's fine.
No.
No,
I will never artificially cook my body. No way.
But it will make you feel better.
Well.
Does it actually make you feel like you've been in the sun?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it does. It's comfortable. If you can find the right tanning booth or you know, whatever you got, it'll You'll enjoy it. Take a nice little nap.
Somebody slip you a roofie colada before you go in there?
No.
I don't know. You can sneak something in, but I don't think Joe's drinking.
He doesn't know what a roofie colada is, but that's okay.
I'll tan your hide.
Fake and bake. Thank you, Paul. Kathy in Snohomish. Hello, Kathy.
Hello. Geocaching.
once you make your initial investment.
Joe's not a geocacher.
I love geocaching. I put that with sun tanning. Yeah. It's just I don't understand that one.
Geocaching, tell them what it is, Kathy.
You use your GPS and you go on a website which has different hikes that will take you to these different treasures that you find your coordinates on your GPS. And they can be small hikes in a park in town, or it can be a big deal.
It's like, it's, you know what it is? It's the modern day version of the old guy with the metal detector on the beach.
Yeah. Well, it's like treasure hunting. There's a map. There's a GPS treasure.
Yeah, but the
map.
Guy with the metal detector was just hoping to find pennies that people dropped.
Somebody's watch.
And in this case, you know that something's out there, and you've got a piece of electronic gear to go and find it.
But isn't the deal that it's worthless? I mean, this isn't a real treasure, right? Isn't this like a little note somebody put there to congratulate you?
It can be that. It can be little trinkets that you drop off. They've had articles on the TV where they have offered trips. There have been tickets to trips in different places.
We should do some geocaching contests on the show, don't you think?
Sounds good.
Yeah. We should hide something really good. What we should do is have like 102.5 geocaches, and one of them is like the big prize.
You're going out to your high steel bridge there.
The high steel bridge. No, I'm not going to have anybody fall off a bridge and have them say they were trying to find my contest.
There's your problem, babe.
But yeah, and there's
liability.
I know. Once we run it by the lawyers, they'll hate it. Thank you, Kathy. Anything helping? Mark in Linwood, hello.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
All right. Cure for cabin fever.
I think that Joe should probably go take a Hummer on a test drive.
All right, here's how I'm going to award the prize. If your cabin fever thing makes him belly laugh, then I'll give you the prize.
And I'm guessing you sell Hummers.
No, I used to work on them.
Oh, okay, all right. Well, I was going to say, if your suggestion is really self-serving for your own business, but it's not. So
you have no interest in test driving a Hummer?
No, I'm not a real machine guy. I mean, I guess
that's not Joe's hot button. It's this big status type car.
Okay.
Sweet thought. But
I thought this would be really uplifting. Thanks, Joe.
Sorry.
Appreciate it.
It works helping me. This all sounds great.
It all sounds like good stuff.
Yeah.
Always look on the bright side of life.
This is the reprise at the end of the movie. Yeah, the whole orchestra.
Always look on the bright side of life.
Yeah, you're nailed to a cross, looking over the valley. All is well.
For life is quite absurd, and death's the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow.
And the Seahawks didn't win.
Give the audience a grin. Enjoy it. It's your last chance at the end. So always look on the bright side of life.
We helping?
Yeah, I feel better.
Yeah,
I think.
He's lying.
No,
he's
I do.
It. Joe, I can tell when you're faking it.
Well, I do
all
feel better.
All men say that.
Yeah.
I'm about 363 days of the year. I'm in really good shape.
It's, oh, this is just a 2-day deal?
The last couple days, yeah.
All right. A couple quick questions for the audience. If you got something you think will cheer Joe up on his cabin fever days, I like how Joe puts a number on everything. He's like, he was starting to drink. He was like, I'll just drink for 6 months on, 6 months off. Cabin fever came up this morning. He goes, it's just 2 days,
two
I
days
promise.
Well, maybe a week, but, you know, it's been the last 2 days. I think already I'm feeling better.
After a big
so.
Steaming pile of Seahawk football, who wouldn't be depressed?
Jason in Tacoma, speak.
Actually, works a little better when you're older. And when I was a kid, I used to do some mushrooms this time of year.
How did you save them? Did you dry them or freeze them? Because there's no mushrooms to pick this time of year.
Well, that's why you pick them in the fall and you dry them out.
Yeah, it helped when I was a kid, too. But I don't think that would settle the right way these days.
No. You got PTA meetings to go to.
Yeah, that wouldn't...
You're all dragon-headed freaks! Freaks!
You're going to be... Are you going to be the sound man for a school play?
There's some debate about that. I was asked to be the sound man. It's funny because, you know, sometimes when you're in a certain business, people think you know a lot about something.
Like you're in the sound audio business.
Radio, and they assume that you're an expert on sound. And boy, I'm.
And they asked you to be the sound mixer for the school play?
Right, right. The problem is, I mean, you're an expert.
Get Joe, he's on the radio.
Exactly. Yeah. You're an expert on sound. I'm not an expert on sound. I have no control
flatulence.
Over
flatulence. You do well.
You want somebody to sit in the back and make fun of the kids? I'll be your
guy.
Right,
let's go back to the phones. Here's Teresa in Belfair. Hello, Teresa. Your cure for cabin fever.
I think Joe should try taking a strip dancing class where they teach you strip dance.
For guys?
Yeah. He could get in shape and spice up his sex life and bring his spirits up, and he can meet new people. It'd be fun.
Other hairy, sweaty men who want to get naked for their loved ones.
Do they do that? Like, do they do that with like men in a room together?
Oh yeah.
No.
That's not a striptease class. That's a becoming gay class.
No, I've heard of women. That does make me laugh. By the way.
All right, you got yourself
pizza.
Two tickets and a medium pizza to the Main Stage Comedy Music Club. Congratulations, Teresa.
Thank you. Right.
Did you go to one of these? Did you send your husband?
No, but I've always thought it would be something fun to do, and I thought that it might lift Joe's spirit to make him happy.
Is there a guy's class for this? Because this would make him happy.
Yeah.
Well, it wouldn't make me happy to go. That would make me miserable. I mean,
it would make us very happy, though.
It would make everybody else happy, probably.
Hello, YouTube? Yeah, I got a beauty for you, fam. I got a beauty for you.
Oh, by the way, don't let me forget. I've got the best YouTube to tell you about. And we'll put a link up to it on our site. Thank you very much, Teresa. Will in Maltby.
Hey, I got it. A cure is urge to spend money on booze, give him some exercise, spice up his sex life, and it's fun to do. And that's take some ballroom dance lessons with your wife.
Ballroom dance?
Oh, that would make her so happy. Once again, I think that might...
She might even give you some.
Well, that might make me miserable, but she would love...
How long
love
has it been, by the way?
Joe,
it hasn't been that
it
long.
It is more fun than you could imagine.
Not that long, Joe?
No.
Are we talking, if I was an accountant, would we have anything to put down for fourth quarter?
who's got a W lately? You or the Sonics?
Well... Inflation is at 6.something%.
How's
right
inflation
now,
in your pants?
Yeah, it's, I'm not going to get into it. Thank you. That's a secondary issue. I didn't mean to really even.
That'd be primary for me. We were all set to go last night, and my kids came over.
Oh, you like that commercial?
Lisa even told him this was going to be.
Whatever, she's ready. I'm ready.
This was going to be his night, but hey, good to see you.
Glad to see you.
She told the boys?
Yes, she did. We don't.
Did they run screaming from the house?
Look, this is the edited show. What you hear here, we say at my house, we leave nothing out.
No kidding.
Yeah, and I'm sort of watching as Keith's fiance like gets to know our family
and recoils in terror.
And I don't know. I think she's pretty cool. I actually do.
She's
but
a great girl.
But I wonder when things like that come out if because most families don't talk about that.
No,
stuff.
And there's good reason. That's pretty inappropriate to say in front of your kids.
Not at 20. Not when your kids are in their 20s. Oh, not in front of the children. Are you kidding? They're doing things I never dreamed of doing until I was 46.
Dude, it is never comfortable.
Yeah, is there ever good time to tell your kids you're the reason Daddy's not getting any? Get out.
I don't know. It depends on the family. All right, back to Joe's prop. Let's talk about Joe. What gets rid of cabin fever? According to Cynthia in Woodinville, it is this.
Good morning.
Yes.
Joe, what you need to do is do what the bears do. Dig a big hole and just hibernate somewhere. Wait it out.
I'll tell you, that's what feels best. I went to bed at 7 o'clock last night in my little hole and slept
real... I thought she was going to say defecate in the woods.
Grab a bunny and see if it sticks to his fur.
I'll tell you, that's where I head, and I think I might be a little like a bear in that way.
Just hibernate. Okay, Cynthia.
There's the only problem with that plan, the hibernation plan, Joe, as much as I hate to say this, you are their ray of sunshine. You're the kind of the cure for cabin fever for a lot of people out there. And if you go in the whole city goes in the hole.
Hello, who's this?
Ellen.
Ellen, you're on.
That he should go to a casino.
I love casinos.
We went up there during the day one time just on a whim because we were bored, and it was a lot of fun.
All right. Jan in Belfair.
Hi. What Joe needs to do is, first off, send his wife off to a spa for a day, and then he needs to sit down with Emily with a big old bowl of beans and the funniest movie he can find and have a fart contest. Guaranteed.
And he's going to win.
Look at him. Oh.
Does paint a funny picture in my head. It makes me laugh. I will say that.
And I don't know, you know, because you really should let the kid win somehow.
Yeah, Tutapalooza.
Yeah.
Getting her to eat the beans would be an issue. She doesn't
like beans.
No, but she...
Yeah, but you know there's something that she eats.
Like, oh, everything.
You actually plan... See, me, my wife and I plan a little romantic time. Uh-huh. You all think it's weird, but you all thought it was perfectly normal for him to plan a fart contest with his 9-year-old daughter.
Just trying to make the guy laugh.
Have you actually done this, Jen?
Not on purpose, but we camp a lot.
Yes. When the mood hits.
Yes.
Thank you. All right. We're done. I know there's more of you. Thank you for calling. We gave away pizza, which is nice.
I still want to bring Joe to our hot yoga class.
Let's see. Hot yoga, that's the hot part.
That's when they put fudge on top.
Well, yoga is where you, like, sit, right? Isn't that sitting mostly?
No. Actually, an hour of it's standing and a half hour is on the floor.
It's an hour and a half.
But it's getting all the toxins out of you, and it makes you feel all warm and energized. And
sweaty room?
Yeah.
Mostly women, too, right?
Actually, a lot of men have started up this year. But there are some hot women to look at, for sure.
So hot is the heat in the room?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Oh, they turn the heat up in the room so that you will sweat doing this exercise. And it the toxins come out of your pores.
Yep.
But don't let anybody fool you about yoga.
What's wrong with yoga?
It doesn't look like difficult exercise.
Uh-huh.
But it's really as much of a workout as you would get with weights. And the trick in yoga, because I've researched this and decided not to go. The trick, I have a friend who's really into this. Uh-huh. He makes fun of me and the club and the weights and says, oh, that's ridiculous. You don't need weights. The trick with yoga is you use your own body's weight by putting it into various uncomfortable positions.
Mm-hmm.
To develop all kinds of strength. And there are people who say, you know, you won't get the body of a bodybuilder, but that you will be incredibly strong and thoroughly as fit as a human being needs to be if you do this.
I actually combine weightlifting and yoga, and I tell you, it's amazing.
Hmm. Totally not for Joe, by the way. I don't know why anybody even brought it up.
Yoga for
Joe? I think he'd be great at it.
You got to be able to cross your legs and stuff, don't you?
No, that's the beauty.
Is that become a problem? Crossing your legs?
You can't cross your legs anymore?
Well, sitting and crossing.
You can still reach your behind to wipe, right?
Ooh. Oh, yeah, yeah.
He says it like, oh, yeah.
So
surprise.
Happy days are here again.
Like the late Sir Edmund Hillary, Seattle's Ed Beasters has been to the top of the world. Ed first summited Mount Everest in 1990 and has added many mountains to his climbing resume since. He's done Everest a half dozen times and has also covered, every other one of the planet's 13 other big peaks that exceed 26,000 feet in altitude. He's the only American ever to accomplish this, and he did every climb without the aid of oxygen, other than what was, you know, there for the taking in the air. You can read his inspiring story in No Shortcuts to the Top, Climbing the World's 14 Highest Peaks. He's been in the studio with us before, an inspiring guy, Ed Veesters. Welcome back on the phone to the Bob River Show. Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. I got a question for a guy like you. You've done so much. You're motivational. The Seahawks you motivated the Seahawks during the Super Bowl season.
Super Bowl 5 drive, yeah.
When you go through life now, do you still discover, new? Are you still evolving that? Have you got your philosophy pretty much in place, or are you still surprised by life's challenges?
Yeah, every day something new comes up or there's something exciting, a new opportunity. I don't take for granted what I did, but I think what I did helps me to get through a lot of day-to-day problems or how to figure out how to accomplish something. No matter how long something takes to accomplish, I'm willing to deal with it as long as I like what I'm doing. And I think that's an important message as well. If you like what you do, whatever you put into it is worth it.
And should people who are in jobs that they absolutely despise and hate, should they all walk off the job right away without a plan, or should they just, like, carefully get themselves out?
I think you should definitely think about walking away, but, you know, make a plan so that you have an option. But, you know, I believe in doing what you like, and don't spend your time at work or doing a job that you don't like, because at the end of the day, you're not going to be happy, and you're really not going to perform that well. So why do it?
That's the thing they always say about mountain climbers, too, is they, you know, they say it when something bad happens, but they say doing what he loved, which a lot of people don't do what they love, do they?
It's true, yeah. I mean, all the people that I've met that climbed with me or had climbed with me, you know, we all loved what we did, and that's how we started in this sport. You know, it's not easy. There's some struggle involved, but you have to be passionate about it to work through the difficulties. And then when you get to the top of one of these peaks, you go, wow, that was a pretty exciting journey, and that's kind of what it's all about.
Of all your accomplishments, Ed, and I've followed you in the papers and stuff around here, the story I read with, I think, the biggest source of happiness is that you have retired from high altitude climbing, and I know you've got young kids and stuff. I think that was a good decision. Was there one particular thing that made you think maybe I would stay a little lower on the ground, or is it just kind of you felt like it was time?
Well, you know, it's kind of a misconception that I quote-unquote retired. After I stepped off of Annapurna, my last 8,000-meter peak that, you know, it completed my goal, I was immediately interviewed by a writer, and he said, are you going back to the Himalaya, the 8,000-meter peaks? And I said, not immediately. And so he paraphrased that into Viesters retires. And
he heard not.
And there it sits on Wikipedia today, yeah. Casey.
And then, you know, so I've had to explain it ever since. So I'm not really retired. I may have pulled it back a notch or two, but I still love climbing. I could potentially still go to Everest. I'm still adventuring. So it's kind of a misconception that I'm done.
Ed, I've never climbed a mountain before, but I've done marathons, and I've had that moment in the middle of the race. Not where I go, maybe I shouldn't finish it, but where I go, what the hell am I doing running marathons at all? I'm going to quit when this is over. This was a bad idea. Do you ever have those moments when you're climbing a mountain?
Yeah, you do.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of times, especially on the summit day, where you've been on the mountain for 6 or 7 weeks, and that last day by far is 10 times harder than any other day. And you're slowly toiling away toward the summit for 10 or 12 hours and gasping for air. And there's moments definitely during that when you go, God, this is hard and this is somewhat painful. But then you kind of go, I'm here because I want to be here. Nobody's forcing me to do this. Yes, I could quit. But ultimately, I know if I kind of persevere and struggle through that and get to the top, that's when you go, man, that was definitely worth it. And there's the people that do achieve that. That is such an amazing feeling that it becomes very addictive.
And, Joe and I go through all of those same emotions. Just it only takes 30 minutes on a treadmill for us. It's just the same thing, though. Exactly.
Yeah, sometimes like 20 would be just fine. I think 20 minutes is a good workout.
Ed, I've climbed one peak, and that's a baby peak, and they had to pull me up in a radio flyer wagon. We went to the top of Mount St. Helens.
Uh-huh.
And you've done
which is, by the way, that's no baby peak. Mount St. Helens is an accomplishment. Ed, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it used to be a little bit higher.
Jesus.
Yeah, I know. I wouldn't have tried it before it blew up, by the way. My question is this. I mean, when we got to the top, we turned around and came back down. You've climbed every peak on the planet. What's the time at the top like? And why don't you stay for a few days? Why don't you take up some stuff and camp out?
I can tell you this. You're in the dead zone, right? Well, tell them about the death zone.
Well, yeah, the death zone is any altitude or any place above approximately 23,000, 24,000 feet. And the higher you go, since there's less oxygen, the less time you can spend up there. Otherwise, you're simply going to wither away and die. And the summit of these peaks are so remote and so far up there, you can't really spend the night up there. You can be there for an hour or so, and then you got to start getting down the mountain.
Atmosphere there will not sustain human life.
Correct. And that's why it's called the death zone. I mean, you could lay there in a tent, you could relax and eat food. Your body, though, would still slowly...
Come on, chirp up an oxygen tank, a bottle of Chablis or something. Look around, man. You made it to the top. Look
but
around.
He does it without the oxygen. And probably no epidural for your wife either. It takes a certain kind of person. Eric, go ahead. You got a question.
Yeah, Ed, I'm wondering how you think the nature of adventure will change. Because in the past, adventure meant you were going to go out somewhere and explore a new continent that hadn't been found. And now it seems that all of the major peaks have been climbed. how will we push ourselves now, since most of the major accomplishments have already been completed?
Well, you know, I agree with that, but their adventure for me was for me to go someplace new. It didn't matter if other people had climbed the mountain before me, because for me it was a new adventure, and there's not a dotted line on this mountain or these mountains that I followed. I created my own path up the mountain, and that, I think, should be the new definition of adventure. You going someplace new, you experiencing something new, because you're right, a lot of those blank places on the map are no longer there, but you can still find a few niches where nobody's gone, but it's kind of, we're going to have to change that definition a little bit.
Hey, Ed, virtual adventure has become all the rage. Would you ever, if they came to you, Nintendo came to you, would you endorse a Wii Mount Everest?
Or one of those...
Strap a controller to each ankle and...
Second Life Mount Everest, where you open your own shop and everybody can do everything you've done without actually going outside?
Well, I mean, that's okay.
Come on, there's money in it for you.
Yeah,
there's a lot of money.
No, everybody's got to choose their own adventure. And for me, it's the actual process and the going and the physical and the mental challenge. But a lot of people...
But they'll license the stuff. They'll put your face on it.
Sure. if somebody wants to do it that way, you know, that's fine. If it gives you a taste of what I discovered, whatever. That's totally cool.
Yeah, it's sad.
Ed, would you say that mountain climbing is the greatest high there is for you? And if it's not, what else gives you a similar high?
Well, you know, for me it was the challenge and the experience, and the high that I got was seeing what I was able to push myself through physically and mentally. And that's when the endorphins get flowing. After all that work, you're on the top and you go, man, that was an amazing event that I just put myself through. And, you know, honestly, there's not a lot of other physical, mental activities that compare to that for me.
Sir Edmund Hillary was the first. Many have followed, including yourself. He passed on this week. Did you ever get a chance to compare notes with Sir Edmund Hillary about climbing Mount Everest?
You know, I met him at a dinner about 6 or 8 years ago where I was honored to be sitting at his table, and I don't remember what the conversation was. I think I was more like, you know, I'm not worthy to be sitting next to this man. But he was a great person. He was left a great legacy of not only being one of the first two people to climb Everest, but everything he did afterwards as far as providing schools and hospitals for the people of Nepal. He created a foundation to raise money to do that. It's called the Himalayan Foundation.
And it's still self-sustaining to this day, is it not?
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
A great legacy, and Ed Veister's following in his footsteps and more. Ed Veister's No Shortcuts to the Top, climbing the world's 14 highest peaks. Nice talking to you again, Ed.
Thanks a lot, guys. Yeah.
It's one of the most unusual eBay auctions we've seen in a long time. It's called the Last Concept Sky Commuter Aircraft in Existence, which is a long phrase that means, here's a plane they were working on that's right out of the Jetsons, and it was in the 1980s. 60 investors, including some Boeing folk, put over $6 million into researching and developing, and this one prototype escaped destruction. By destruction, I mean they ran out of funding, the thing went bust, most of what was put into it was destroyed. This one remnant car, and by the way, I'll let the owner who's selling it tell you, it will get off the ground, but it is not stable. So it comes with a warning, essentially, that says, do not use for its intended purpose. Here is Steve Stahl in Dawsonville, Georgia. Steve, hello.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. You're talking to Seattle, so you know it's a big aviation community, and of course, although Boeing moved their corporate headquarters to Chicago, a lot of Boeing planes are being built by people listening to you right now. So this car did sell on eBay, correct?
That is correct.
And is it a car or a aero car? Is that what you call it?
It was meant to be three items in one, and it displays that throughout the ship. It's was meant to vertical takeoff. And it was meant to, it could land on water. It looks like the bottom of a boat, completely sealed. And then it has a rear propulsion turbine that propels it forward to be driven on the ground. So you vertically take off, land. You can drive it from both sides, and the two pedals in it steer the one front wheel, and then you can control it with that.
Wow. If it was a lifestyle, it would be trisexual.
It's
undateable.
Wow. Very quiet in here. Okay.
That had a smooth takeoff.
So, much like the car, that was very unstable. I'm sorry. So now, you sold it for how much?
It went for $131,700.
Did you have a reserve? That I mean, that seems a little low for something so outstanding as this.
Well, it started off that just before I put it on eBay, I had it in the garage since October, and it does not belong here. It should be displayed someplace, but nobody knew anything about it. So I just started doing some history checking and started finding out what it was, started calling old phone numbers, and things started surfacing. I got depressed about it. I took it to a couple local car dealers and tried to trade it in, oddly enough, on something, and hoping to get $25,000, and they laughed me out of there.
You tried to get $25,000 for it, and they laughed at you.
Yeah, they did. They wouldn't even trade it for a pickup truck.
So at one time, you were willing to take $25,000. Now, and now you've done reasonably well. I disagree with Joe. I think that's an amazing amount of money to get for it. But I also agree with him that it's aviation history. Why is it history? Why did they give up funding? Why did this car not get built?
Well, this is to my understanding, and I've had people come forward since that auction that actually worked on this particular project.
And by the way, if anyone knows about this and is listening, you can reach us at 1-800-252-1025 if you've got information for Steve Stahl. Yes, go ahead, Steve.
And they came forward and they were telling me how it was done. There were three built, and they were dubbed Prototype 1, 2, and 3. The first one, I understand, did not have a full shell on it. It was more of a frame for a layout to get their testing started on. The second one in the photographs of the auction was the white one with the blue stripes. That actually was driven around on the road for a while and out on the highway, and then they put it into the lifting stage. And mine was right behind it. Mine was the last one made.
The last of its kind.
Yep. And they put the other one on the tether, 14-foot cable, I understand, and I talked to a gentleman that was there and watched it and worked on it. He said it got up to 5 feet, jumped up immediately, too, and was unmanned, and they were trying to control it with a joystick. I still have that joystick. It was in the console of mine underneath. So, and it got away from him, jumped up about 10 feet, and it started, it was very unstable, and it went down nose first and then came back up and disintegrated when it hit the rear and the blades went into the body.
So, that's not the one yours is not a rebuild. I mean, that's not the one you had. That's
no.
The one before.
Mine, from that point on, after that test did not work so well, other than getting off the ground, had no gyros in it, to my understanding, no computer assisted. They were basically trying to fly it like a big radio-controlled helicopter.
Okay.
And
now, these are aviation guys. Presumably, they do a lot of work before they put something in the air, and they know it's going to fly, right?
That's what I think. The first thing with experimental aircraft like this, first thing what I would have done is just put a one-foot cable on it, something, get it up in the air and just not give it anywhere to go hardly. If I'd turn back the clock, that's what I would do, and I think they felt the same way.
How did this thing get from Painfield to Dawsonville, Georgia, and how did you become the legal title holder to this piece of history?
It was odd. It's for quite a while now, make Airwolf helmets out of fiberglass. And this helicopter museum in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, contacted me and asked me if he could sell them in his museum. And he also had a Bell 222 like Airwolf. So I do movie props, and I said, well, let's just do the helicopter. So I did the full-scale Airwolf for him. And it was hanging in the museum over top of this little sky car. And he bought it from two guys out of Washington State, where you are, and they trailered it down to him. And it was on display. Well, the museum had to close in approximately a year. It just wasn't enough traffic in Pigeon Forge to keep it open.
Pigeon Forge is not a huge tourist destination.
Aerospace mecca.
I got to cross the Smokies to get there. And beautiful country, but yeah, it's not a winter town. So he asked if there was anything in the museum that I wanted and to help him place Airwolf into a museum. Well, I didn't even see this in person, but I said I'd like that little silver car, whatever it is.
Wow.
So we agreed on a price. I closed in.
How much did you pay for it? You can say now.
I can't say that.
You can't say it was that low. Good.
Because you made a bank on this thing.
Yeah.
I got my money back, and I did not know what it was going to go for. I would have been happy with, you know, anything. I think my stepping stone in this story is that they were going to turn it into a golf cart. They didn't know what to do with it. So I wasn't going to let that happen, and I just took it home and
did a history check on it. Basically.
Now, do you have a wife, and was she as thrilled with this as mine would have been?
Well, I'll tell you this. I have, it's in the two-car garage, and it's taking one of the spaces, and every time she comes to the house,
yeah.
She says, when do I get my space back? She just wanted the thing to go away. And everybody said, what are you going to do with it? You know, it doesn't have the motors in it, and I didn't know what to do with it. So, but I knew it was very special. I knew this because I know aircraft engineering, and this is not some thrown-together toy.
All right. Now, it's sold to, is it Paul Allen?
No, it is not.
Oh, okay.
I'll say it is not. I'm going to keep, I can tell you this, it's not going to be further R&D'd or, you know, researched and developed into something and possibly lose this. It has gone to one of the most prestigious collections in the world. And so it'll have good company, believe me.
So someone who collects aircraft is going to...
No, actually collects cars.
Cars?
Yes.
Jay Leno, he's got a lot of...
I saw this thing on the internet. Kev, look at this. Look at this, Kev. He's driving to your patio. Look at this. It's pretty funny stuff. Look at this. Pretty good.
All right, it could be Jay Leno.
Give me a 10-foot off the ground. That's like you, Kev. You're not 10 foot high, aren't you? Yeah.
All right, so Steve, you can't say, but someone may announce it. And will it be something the public can see or just a private collection?
I think it's a little bit of both, to be honest with you. And
wait a minute. Now, who's the big car collector around here?
The LeMays. We have the LeMay Car Museum that's going to be built here in Tacoma.
Is it them?
No, I can say it's not them.
Ah.
Is it coming back to Washington? Is it coming home?
It's heading back that direction. It'll be in Arizona.
All right. And here's Joe has a comment for you. Joe is in Arlington. Hello, Joe.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Hey, when I back in the late 80s, I heard about that thing. I live in Arlington, and went over there and met the guys that were working on it. And it was just in a hangar right there at the Arlington Airport, half a dozen guys at the time kind of working on it. It wasn't like a Boeing project. There were guys that worked for Boeing on it. There was a private kind of dream these guys were putting together. It looked stylish as could be, and they had a lot of aerodynamic problems, and mostly thrust problems, and they could never afford the four helicopter engines at $750,000 a piece that they figured out they'd need to get this baby up in the air proper.
In other words, it would have been very pricey even if they were able to get it to work right.
Right. Yeah, they started out what they thought they were going to build an expensive car, you know, $20,000, get it off the ground, people were going to be flying around, and by the time they got into it pretty heavy, they realized that they're looking at a $6 million car that none of them...
This was during the World's Fair, too, was it? When was the World's Fair?
That was 62 here.
Oh, that was 60s?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
It was after the Space Needle was up, though. They had the whole Jetsons concept thing going. Thank you, Joe. Steve, we appreciate you bringing us up to date on this. We'll post a picture of it on our website, and we'll let folks know if and when you can publicly say where it's on display.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Mike and Eric have some predictions for the new year. We didn't get to theirs yesterday. Let's see what Eric says.
I think that the Hollywood writer's strike will finally end in May after Al Gore reinvents the internet for businessmen.
Huh?
I think
my prediction of Eric taking on hallucinogenics has come true already this new year.
All right. Apple will continue to be a juggernaut, and Steve Jobs, to prove that they're more hip than the recording industry right now, will be on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine.
That's easy. All right.
And now that he's officially retired from Microsoft...
Notice that I didn't come up with it, but I just said it was easy.
Okay. Now that he is officially retired from Microsoft, Bill Gates is not trying to cut off anyone's air supply and will be nominated for a Nobel Prize for his work with the Bill and Melinda Gates
Foundation. That's another easy one I missed. All right.
The 2008 Olympics will go off without a hitch. China will become a huge tourist destination and invent its own version of Disneyland and Las Vegas. Bob will be deeply affected by his trip to Africa. He will become the Bono of radio when he gets back. Spike will find his missing testosterone and become a wonderful specimen of manliness. He'll lose weight, tone up, and start losing his hair. Joe's weight will average around 220 for the year, thanks to the wet and the dry season.
I'd take 220.
I'd take bald for being in shape.
Casey will be shacking up with John by the end of 2008.
One rent, one world.
Wow, that's really slow progress, too.
With a ring and a date.
wait, say that last part
again.
We're
out of time.
Hold on, he used the R word. A ring and a date.
A ring and a date?
Yep.
Okay, now you're on.
Mike Jones will finally fly with the Blue Angels, and he'll have another child to add to his growing family named Bruce Wayne Jones. Pedro will not have a driver's license by year's end, won't be a Hollywood writer either, but he and Luciana will have their green card.
And you know what all this means? You've taken up all the time.